Kevin De Bruyne cost City as much as the entire Leicester City squad had cost.
I was 28 and I'm thinking, I just want to play one Premier League game and I'll be satisfied, you know.
Our Christmas party's in Copenhagen, so I'll never forget it. We're all dressed as Pac-Man and Turtles.
Jamie Vardy, who worked in a factory, or had worked in a factory, played for Fleetwood, and he'd scored 5 goals the previous season. He won the league by 10 points. 10 points.
I had the best summer of my life. I think I didn't take the medal off, mate, to be honest.
It was one of a kind, you know, the ownership, and God rest his soul, Vishai in particular, because they really invested into the team, you know, and made us feel a part of his family.
Was that the beginning of the end?
I don't want to probably admit it, honest, you know, because, you know, I'm still in the euphoria of the... of all the good times.
Just never give up, man. That was our mentality. You know, anything's possible. You know, he didn't just stop there. He carried on and he's still playing now. Do you know what I mean? So.
Hello, welcome to the Jeff Stelling Show, brought to you by OLBG. Now, just try and imagine Curaçao or Haiti winning this year's World Cup. Impossible, isn't it? Maybe that puts in perspective Leicester City's triumph in the Premier League exactly 10 years ago. Curaçao and Haiti are both 5,000 to 1 to win in the United States, same price as Leicester City were to win the Premier League title. The bookies thought the Loch Ness Monster being discovered or Kim Kardashian becoming the next president of the United States was more likely. With all due respect to Wimbledon winning the FA Cup, Nottingham Forest brilliant triumphs in it was the Champions League now, but what was the European Cup in those days? This is by far the greatest footballing story of my lifetime. And believe you me, that's a long, long time. A decade on and with City struggling desperately, we thought it was time to reflect on the ultimate underdog triumph with two of the men who starred for Leicester City, Wes Morgan and Danny Simpson. Thanks for joining us, fellas. I mean, I'm sure you've talked about this a lot of times, but it's a fairy story that you can never hear too much about. Unlike most fairy stories, though, let's begin at the end. Because I remember, and I'm sure most football fans remember, sitting watching that game on a Monday night that you weren't involved in, Chelsea against Spurs, which turned out to be the game where the title was decided. I think Spurs were 2-0 up, weren't they, in it at one stage. So can you remember where you were watching it, Wes?
Yeah, we've got a kind invitation to Jamie Vardy's house. So he put it out there. Was he at training or whatever? Or in the chat, you know, obviously it's a massive game, guys. You're more than welcome to come to ours. Majority of the boys headed over there, you know, expecting and hoping for the best to happen. But it didn't quite go to plan at the start. You know, half time happened and Tottenham was 2-0 up, you know, so... You can imagine the atmosphere in the house was a bit calm and like, okay, guys, it's down to us. We're going to have to do the job ourselves. But then second half was completely different.
Oh, man. Danny, what was it like when Chelsea equalised?
Yeah, we got to half time. We put the drinks away.
Get them back out.
Yeah, we got them back out, yeah. I think you know, when Hazard, you know, as soon as the ball left his foot, it was like slow motion. I think we all knew it was hitting the back of the net. And we just, yeah, we were selling, but we were also nervous. There was still a bit of time to go. But yeah, it was, you know, what a feeling when it was, you know, the final whistle went. And you know what, I think, you know, I mean, being together, you know, was special. I think if we're all separate at home, but I think being at Vardy's house and as a team was just so special that we'll never forget.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the games that people will always talk about. They never seem to talk about Manchester United the previous day when a certain Wes Morgan scored the Leicester goal.
Yeah, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up, Jeff,
actually. I bet you are. Yeah.
Obviously, we've gone into that Man United game thinking, right, if we win, you know, that's it. League. Do you know what I mean? Like, more or less confirmed. But obviously, going to United, it's always going to be tough, to be fair. But I'm proud to say I played my part in that game. Was 1-0 down, scored a header to make it 1-1 and kind of, you know, stuck in the game. And the game ended up being a draw, but what was important, we got a point which proved to be enough to, you know, give us that point tally to eventually, depending obviously on the Chelsea Tottenham result, make us champions. Yeah. So it was a very important point.
I wanted to mention a goal of yours, Danny, as well, but 133 games at Leicester and there weren't any, were there? But you
know. He came close.
That very, Southampton game.
Yeah, it's the Southampton game. What the happened? Goal was open. Yeah. I'll let him explain that, actually.
No, it was literally, I think Vard's got through and he squared one across. I was in the six-yard box. It was Fraser Forster, I think, in goal.
Right.
And honestly, you couldn't miss it. But obviously I did. I think I was already celebrating because we had me and Fuchs, me and Christian Fuchs had a bit of a thing. I don't think we'd scored and we were like both trying to score. I think he'd scored and I was like, yes, this is my chance. And Fraser Forster somehow, I think it came off my heel or something. And
the goal was wide open. He was in the six-yard box. Somehow he's found the keeper who stood on the other side of the goal. It looked like a good save, but he should have definitely scored.
But I did save one off the line for Mane that same game. So I'd prefer to do that job.
That's what I told you. Yeah. And in fairness, you know, just so we can equalise things here, you scored for Newcastle against Peterborough?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah, I did, yeah. It's like a cross shot.
So a cross.
Brilliant. I like defending, so that was my job.
So look, you've won the title. You're around at Jamie Vardy's house. Remember it being a wonderful, wonderful story. But what it meant for you two, I remember reading, Danny, that you went to the bottom of the garden and you were in tears.
Yeah.
So was this sort of validation, if you like, for the times you've been rejected, the times I know you were told you were too small to be a footballer? Did that all come out then?
Yeah, I didn't expect it, but it was exactly right, Jeff. It was just poured out of me, I think, from being young or going to other clubs. Even, you know, before I went to Leicester and QPR and Harry Redknapp, you know, I played most of the games that season and we got promoted and Harry said he didn't want me and I can go to Leicester, and even that was no rejection. But I obviously went to Leicester and they took me in. It was such a great group and the manager was great and the club was amazing. So just went to the end of his garden and rang, you know, your family and friends and just bawling. it was emotional.
Yeah. I mean, you were small, as you showed us in this photo there. How old would you be? Oh, would you be there then, Danny?
Jesus, must have been maybe 7 or 8, maybe, yeah.
Did people genuinely, you know, tell you over the years that you weren't big enough to make it?
Yeah, so, you know, I was lucky. I was at a good club. I was at Man United and there was one year I was 13, 14 and most of the team got released. But United saw something in me, but what they did is they told me to stay down another year. Because I was too small and catch up with the rest of the group. And the other two lads, they went off obviously to the age group above. But yeah, from then I was getting told I might be too small. And even when I was 18, 19, wasn't really in my youth cup team. So I just had to battle and fight my way through it and maybe try and work harder than the people next to me. Yeah. And it sort of gave me some resilience, really, and anything I could come or face, I feel like I'd come across, because people are always saying, not sure, not sure. And you know, Man City didn't want me, Liverpool didn't want me. So yeah, it was all that kind of, you know, gets you ready for, you know, something, to achieve something.
Yeah. I mean, it must be difficult to cope with mentally. I mean, when you did eventually leave Manchester United, I guess the aim is just have a decent career. Yeah. A lot of people, when they've been at a club like United, just disappear without trace, don't they?
Yeah, I said it's, and I also feel like my time at United as well is when I got told to leave from Sir Alex. Like, it was my club I supported, club I love, and I've been there 10 years. You just assume you're gonna be there forever. But yeah, it was tough to take that. But yeah, like I said, it's, you've got to, when you leave United, and I went to Newcastle, which is a massive club, as we know, but you just want to have a good career. You don't think you're going to leave and win the Premier League, or you just, what I said, you just want to try and get to, you know, 34, 35, have a solid career. And but I said, all them little bits of the journey, you know, it paves the way.
Yeah. How did Sir Alex break it to you then? Was he as forthright as he usually is?
No, the worst thing was, is I was already on loan at Newcastle. So I actually didn't get a chance to say bye to everyone, which was tough. But no, he just said, look, it's not meant to be. I think we'd signed I got the permit for the twins, you know, Rafael and Fabio. So I kind of knew, like, these were good Brazilians coming through and it was time to let it go. But it's still tough. But now, so Alex just said, good luck. I'm sure Newcastle's a fantastic place to be and good luck, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Wes, I read that, you know, your basic ambition was just to play a game in the Premier League. Because you played, you know, some of your career anyway, down at sort of the third level of English football and obviously in the Championship as well. So did you think that was the pinnacle when you played your first game, let alone winning a title?
Yeah, you know, to even think about ever winning a Premier League title was nothing I would even consider. Do you know what I mean? My early days in my football career, especially at youth level, got released from Notts County and then kind of didn't have nowhere to go. So I went college and went to play semi-pro football.
We've got that's your Notts County days.
Yeah. Your legs there.
My legs have always been big.
Yeah. I know, but
you had the opposite problem, didn't you? Because people said to you that you were too big.
Yeah, exactly. So you got Danny's too small, I'm too big. You know what I mean? So a bunch of misfits, really. But yeah, you know, I've always kind of been one of the bigger kids. And in one sense, that helps you because of the physicality, you can handle that. In the other sense, sometimes the coaches look at you and think, you know, is he really fit? Can he really, you know, got that stamina? Can he sustain, you know, 90 minutes at a high level? So there's a few challenges for me. I mentioned how I got released from Notts County, played semi-pro football, went to college and kind of like, okay, I don't even know if I was even going to make it as a professional footballer. And then I got opportunity to go for trials at Nottingham Forest, which was successful. Had to work hard, like you said. You know, the kind of the size and weight issue was a problem. So
I bet they ran you and ran you and ran you.
They did. You know, I was literally on a Saturday. The lads were playing, and I would just have to just run. You know, so yeah, it was very tough at the beginning, but worked hard. Broke into the youth team. Then eventually got into the first team. Spent a long time at Nottingham Forest, 9.5 years. Been in the Championship, 3 seasons in League One. And at that time, you know, I'm getting older. I think I was 28 and I'm thinking, I just want to play one Premier League game and I'll be satisfied, you know. I can end my career thinking I played with the best, I played in the Premier League. Just to get that badge on the shirt would have been, you know, I'd be satisfied. But got an opportunity to go to Leicester and, you know, going from Forest to Leicester, it's a bit controversial depending which side you're looking from. But obviously, went there anyway. And I could see what was going on behind the scenes. You know, they'd just been taken over by some Thai owners. They had a real ambition to try and push for the Premier League. I thought, right, this is my opportunity. I've got to make it happen. Went to Leicester. I went in the January window. So it took 2.5 seasons before we actually got promoted. And, you know, for me, I was more than happy and satisfied at that stage of my career. Little did I know, you know, I was going to go on to obviously win the Premier League and to spend many years in the Premier League.
Obviously, we all associate with Leicester and Nottingham Forest, but interestingly, one of the photos that you brought in for us is you in a very different kit. There it is.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, so
the clue is in the stand at the background where it says Harriers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, same problem, big thighs again.
Yeah. So, this is Kidderminster, yeah?
So, Kidderminster Harriers. I remember at the time, you know, I was doing well in the youth team at Nottingham Forest, and there the first team was pushing to get into the playoffs and wanted some backup, you know, and I was probably the next one in line to kind of do, you know, a rare moment of like a couple bad injuries in the defence area, you know, I'll probably be on the bench and be in the squad. So the gaffer at the time, Paul Hart, wanted me to go out and get some experience and get, you know, play some first team football. So I relished the challenge, went to Kidderminster 4 weeks, got my first ever professional goal. It was a good experience, especially at that level. You know, it's not as professional as what I was used to be fair, but, you know, that's the levels that I was playing at the time. But now gained valuable experience at that time and went back to Forest and yeah, pushed on from there.
Yeah, pushed on to such a degree that when you won the title, you're only the third outfield player ever to play every minute in a title-winning side, which is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the others, you're in good company. I mean, John Terry. Gary Pallister.
Yep.
All centre halves. Well, you must be the Iron Man.
You know, we're the guys that don't get the glory, but you know, we're the always there to be counted on when it needs to be. But no, it's a fantastic stat there, you know. And I think just to put a bit more kind of sauce on that, kind of the season before, I think I missed maybe one or two games, and then the off season I was away playing international duty in two tournaments. So I came back to the beginning of the 15-16 season on the, I think I maybe landed on the Tuesday, trained on the Thursday, and then played on the Saturday, and I went to play every game and we won the league.
You're just happy you missed pre-season.
Well, that's always made.
That's what it was.
Now listen, do yourself a favour and head to prizes.olbg.com, prizes.olbg.com, because the team at OLBG have put together some absolute crackers for you. You can win signed shirts from the guests that we've had on this podcast. I'm telling you, some of the names on these shirts, you will definitely want them on your wall. You can also win a seat in the studio to watch us record an episode, proper behind the scenes stuff. You'll get to meet me, that's the real downside, and of course the guests. So head to prizes.olbg.com. We'll have all the details in the description for this episode, so make sure you take a look. 18 plus only, T's and C's apply, free entry route is available. Now look, we all remember the public celebrations. It was the Everton game, wasn't it? And I'm sure everybody remembers, you know, Nessun Dorma and Andrea Bocelli and his Leicester City shirt as well. What was the occasion like then, Danny? And how did you play football after all of that, by the way?
Especially after the week we just had as well, I don't know. Yeah.
Was it the quiet week leading up to it then?
Yeah, we obviously celebrated a lot that week, and I actually think that game was one of our better games. We played quite well, but no, I think just the build up to it, and I think just, you know, your friends and family and the tickets, and you know, especially it's going to be in something that you never dreamt would happen, and I think just like the night before, and then you know what, I had like ex, you know, players calling me and ringing me saying, listen, enjoy it, take every minute in, from United, or Patrice Evra was one of them, and like I said, it was just an emotional day, and you're trying to then also make sure you still win the game, because you want to finish that game winning, knowing you're going to get the trophy. But it started off like it was raining when it first half, and then all of a sudden, I think Andy King scored in half time, and the sun come out, and it was like perfect, like it was meant to be. Sun comes out, and we end up winning the game, and just the whole celebration with the fans, and like I said, it was just unbelievable. And if that's the one moment I could take back, it would just be that day. From morning to night, yeah.
Well, I think with that as well, though, it's kind of, obviously, we looking back, all the celebrations, we're in the changing rooms.
About to say that, so yeah, with Bocelli.
It's fantastic if you're as a fan and you're out there in Bocelli. I'm looking back, I'm like, wow, it's unbelievable. We was enjoying our time in the dressing room, thinking we're going to get our hands on the trophy. Trying to focus on the game, but I'm getting pulled from pillar to post, like, this is where you need to be, this is going to happen. And you're like, okay, I want to still kind of focus on the game. All the celebrations, you know, like I felt like I missed out a little bit on the full kind of day because we was in the change rooms preparing.
Yeah, do you not think that we should have been in a line on the pitch when he was singing?
Well, that's the thing, but we're preparing for a game, so I'm getting pulled into the referees' meetings, and people getting strappings, and you got bars going crazy with his headphones, and just, do you know what I mean? Like everyone's preparing for the game. But all of that was going on, and it's difficult to kind of get that balance.
I think the one thing I do regret was I didn't hug the trophy enough. I wish I'd took more time with it and got more pictures.
Well, yeah. I don't know. You're hugging it on this picture. Trophy locked. I mean, what a feeling that must be, Danny.
Yeah, it's. I can't even explain it. Like I said, I grew up at United and around the players there, lifting it and winning it, but to hold it yourself and be a big part of the team with, you know, your mates, that you're literally your brothers. It's just, we're just, you know what I mean? We're bonded for life, aren't we? We're still in a WhatsApp group, and it was just unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, people talk about that bonding, and I'm sure that during the course of the week, after the Monday night game, the Chelsea-Spurs game, I'm sure there were, you know, one or two drinks consumed. But was, actually, I mean, Did that happen generally at Leicester? Was that part of the bonding? Could you have a beer together, for instance? Could you be mates as if you were mates in a job that wasn't football?
That's a secret to our success.
I think so as well. I do think so.
No, I think when things are going well, you know, I think us as a group, we like to, you know, enjoy our time. But what was special about our team was we had the ownership that invested into us. And, you know, little things like they'll come down to the dressing room and say, guys, okay, let's get a deal going. Okay, if you win 3 out of the next 5, we're going to take you for a night in London at the casino. We're going to have a great time. And the lads used to buzz off that. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that was the incentive for us to kind of win, but it was something for us to kind of like, you know, probably be more focused on the, obviously we're focused on the game, but to be obviously, you know, there's a prize at the end of this. So, you know, we're going to try our best anyway, but we can obviously have a great time and do it at the same time.
Yeah, I think it was, I just think you train with each other that much and you travel and you hotels, coaches, team meetings, analysis. And sometimes you don't actually speak to your teammates unless like me and Wes were really close, but like the other lads. And sometimes you go out and have a beer and you have a few drinks and all of a sudden, like, Shinji found out he's good on karaoke, you know, and like, you know, and people might have, certain issues or problems, or, you know, you just start talking to people on another level. And I just found like, all of a sudden I felt closer to certain lads that I maybe weren't close to. And then you get in and you talk about the stories from the night before. And I don't know, I just felt like it brought us all quite together. And like Wes said, it wasn't just 5 or 6, it was the whole team, which was pretty unique.
Did Shinji have a song?
I've actually got a video of his first song somewhere in the phone. But no, he was just one of those, his energy and the way he played was exactly how he was, you know, when he's had a few drinks. And
what was funny is obviously Shinji wasn't the best with his English, you know, but obviously once he gets onto the karaoke,
it was great.
He knew all the lyrics. He knew every word. He put 2 sentences together, really.
Speak to you about
it. And then like, he's just singing a whole song.
Yeah,
it was also interesting there when you say when the owner, when the chairman comes into the dressing room as well. Most football clubs, when the chairman comes into the dressing room, it's headphones on, heads down, isn't it? You don't want to see them, but it was different at your club.
Nah, listen, they were unique. They was one of a kind, you know, the ownership, and you know, God rest his soul, Vishay in particular, because they really invested into the team, you know, and made us feel a part of his family. You know, some of the stuff that he's obviously done for me personally, and I'm sure some of the guys could say the same, you know, his generosity. You know, I think when we won the league, I think that season he said, Wes, go and stay in my house in Phuket, you know, take your family, go away. Spent a week there, and you can imagine a billionaire's house in Phuket, what that's like. So that was a unbelievable experience. But no, I think they was a big part of our success, you know, the way they kind of integrated with the team, the way they kind of brought us close to him and his family and the whole club together made it very, very special.
But, you know, the bookies weren't daft. I mean, if you looked at the sides that Leicester were playing against, Chelsea had John Terry, Eden Hazard, Thibaut Courtois in their team. Man United had Rooney and Juan Mata and Bastian Schweinsteiger. City had David Silva, Sergio Aguero, Yaya Toure, Kevin De Bruyne, cost City as much as the entire Leicester City squad had cost. I mean, you had Riyad Mahrez, who'd be playing in Le Havre reserves, and N'Golo Kante had been playing in the French second division, and Jamie Vardy, who worked in a factory, or had worked in a factory, played for Fleetwood, and he'd scored 5 goals the previous season. Yet you won the league. I think people forget, you know, you won the league by 10 points. 10 points. It's a massive margin. You don't forget that. Yeah. But it's a massive margin.
Well, you know, when you break it down and put it in perspective and you look at the kind of the opposition, what it was up against, and you look at our team, and we've always spoke about, you know, we're probably a team of not misfits, a team of kind of like not quite made it. You know, if you go through the team, Kasper, probably under the shadow of his dad a little bit, Christian Fuchs. Is it about 4? I think the only main kind of player that's kind of got that Premier League experience was probably Robert Huth. Do you know what I mean? Because he's been in and around it a long
but
time.
Even then, he got left on a free, didn't he? I came on loan.
Yeah, from was it Stoke?
Yeah.
So did you all feel you had something to prove then?
I think so. I feel like because like Mark or Brighton, Villa didn't want him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, which left everybody scratching their heads, like, didn't they?
That's his club, you know. So, and I think N'Golo's the one. I think he was in it for us at the back four. I think when we had N'Golo in front of us was
made our lives a lot.
What did Hoopy say? You had a few years into your career. Added a few years into his career.
Yeah.
He did all the running, didn't he? But
N'Golo was incredible.
Yeah, it was just a good group. Even lads that would come off the bench as well. Like everyone had something to prove, and we just had that hunger and desire, didn't we? Like, we'd fight for ourselves and each other, and friends and family and the fans.
I mean, I mentioned those squads. Let's just round this off by putting it absolutely in perspective, because not only did you win the league by 10 points, Man City were 15 points behind you.
Oh, wow.
Liverpool were 21 points behind you. And Chelsea, John Terry, Eden Hazard, Thibaut Courtois, 31 points behind you. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it?
We lost three games, pretty insane, really.
Two against Arsenal, wasn't it? And, one against Liverpool.
Yeah, my fault, one of them, maybe.
Was it?
A red card.
That was against, was that Arsenal?
I get reminded of that, but yeah.
What did you get the red card for?
It was soft, two yellows. It was soft. But then we were 1-0 up, and I think Welbeck scored the last minute. But then there's a story behind that, though. What we spoke about a few weeks ago when the manager came in and gave us a week off.
Yeah, you was reminding me about that.
Yeah, so we, you know, like when you see Arsenal trying to win the league, and there's a lot of talk about Arteta and how he's been with them, and obviously we lost that game, I think it's February, to Arsenal 2-1, and obviously I felt like I'd let everyone down, and it's the end of the world, and we've, you know, let the season slip away. And the manager came in, and we didn't have FA Cup game the weekend after, so we had a free weekend, and we were due to train that week, and he just came in and said, lads, see you next Monday. Have a week off, you know, forget about this result, forget about football, don't watch social media, just go and clear your mind, clear your heads. Mm-hmm. And we just went off for a week, and some of us went away, Dubai, we're together, and I think that was one of the master things that he did, that was just a master stroke of telling us just to go and come. We come back, we go again, and I hope you had a good week.
I mean, we'll talk about Claudio Ranieri in just a moment. I mean, the season before, though, I mean, you had a phenomenal run at the end of the season, didn't you? You won 7 of the last 9 to avoid relegation, because you looked like you were in real trouble at the time. And that was under Nigel Pearson. So what was the players' reaction when Nigel got shown the door during the summer?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was tough because, especially for me, you know, Nigel brought me in. You know, he gave me the captain's armband after 6 months, you know. So me and Nigel was quite close, you know. I think he saw a lot of kind of himself in me in terms of my style of play and my character. To see him go was difficult. And I was away on international duty at the time, so it wasn't as if I was, you know, in and around the club or in the city, and like I'm hearing the news, and sometimes you get pulled in to kind of like, okay, this is the decision we're going to make, and, you know, just letting you know as the captain. So, from afar, I think I was over in the States at the time, seeing it happen, you know, was very difficult. But Claudio came in, wasn't sure how it was going to kind of turn out. Obviously, I didn't get to meet him for a long time because I was away on international duty. But, you know, I spoke to the boys, and it was a good feeling, which was positive.
Yeah. What was your view about Nigel?
Me and Nigel had a love hate relationship, really. He could call me a lovable rogue. That year was tough for me. Do you know what it was? I think I obviously came to the squad Leicester had built already, and it was tough to get into that squad. They were close, they were fit, and I was just playing catch up. I felt like always Richard Delap was playing in front of me. I'd knock on his office sometimes, Nigel, and as you do, I'm not playing him.
A brave move.
Yeah, especially
it's a brave
him,
move to go and knock on Nigel's door.
He'll tell you
it?
The truth, by the way, as well. Yeah. But obviously, no, I got so much respect for him because he always told me the truth. You know, there was no, you know, like I said, you went to the door to get answers and you got them, even if you didn't like the answer. I was gutted that he left. And Claudio came in as well. Then he actually, I had my first conversation with Claudio was that I can move on.
Was it really?
Yeah. He's, and I didn't play for the first 7 games. And that's frustrating, but I just kept my head down because I love the group, I love Leicester, I love being there. So I had an opportunity to leave, but I thought, no, I don't want
to
leave.
Well, you must have been gutted to hear that,
though. Yeah, because I thought, new manager coming in, you know, you start as we go. But no, I was with the 21s and coming over to train with the boys sometimes. And I just come over and train with these like it was a young kid getting his chance again to train with the first team. I just kept my head down, and then one day he pulled me in the office and said, I'm sorry that I said that to you, you know, in our first chat. I think you could be good for this team. And I think for a man to say that, or a manager, you know, it's not many would do that. So yeah, and then I got into the team the week after and didn't look back. And so yeah, credit, no, for Claudio to do that was for me, and then I kickstarted my career again.
Yeah, because you played pretty much every game, on, you know, missed one of suspension-wise, but other than that, was 30 appearances, wasn't it? So, you know. I mean, when Claudio did come in, though, I just wonder about the view of the players, because, oh, you know, I spell in England, and I met him a lot of times, and I mean, he was an absolutely adorable character, and you know, he's a brilliant, brilliant character. But he'd gone off and he was being manager of Greece, hadn't he? And they'd lost against the Faroe Islands, which takes some doing, you know, and lost his job. There must have been a bit of scepticism amongst the players.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's a bit of a risk from the kind of like the ownership and the club point of view, especially with kind of Claudio's kind of recent managerial appointments. And probably, for me, I was away, so I didn't really get to feel the impact. I was hoping just to come back into the team, and I wasn't even sure I was going to be playing straight away. You know, I know I was the captain and I played all the season previous, you know, but you just never know. Like Danny said earlier, you know, it's like a bit of a clean slate for everybody, and everyone's got like a second chance. So to go back and to get straight into the team, you know, massive respect for Claudio for doing that. But yeah, there's always that kind of apprehension, like, okay, what's he actually going to bring? Has he still got it? You know, we know he's been successful in the past, but in recent years, you know, it's not really looked like he's kind of got that anymore. So let's just wait and see. So there's that expectation of what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, we all know the story about the, you know, the supposed rewards of pizzas and, you know, the dilly-ding, dilly-dong stuff. But was there a harder side to him? Was there a, you know, a tougher side to him?
Yeah, like what I think was for him, what was really key was that when he came in, obviously I was there pre-season, was that he kind of seen that there was something there already that the team had, that Nigel had left, and he didn't come in and he kind of left from the training routines, you know, listened to Craig Shakespeare, and he kind of kept a lot of stuff the same. He could have come in, couldn't he, and ripped it all up and gone, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that, and he didn't, and I thought that was really key, because he could see the lads were, from the end of the last season, winning them games, we had that confidence, and he kind of let us just go with it. But no, I think what he was really good with keeping us calm. I think he was good with the media, and he kept us away from in a little bubble. That's what I felt anyway. Wes might be different, but yeah. I felt like he kept us away from all the noise.
I think what was good about Claudio, you know, especially when we was doing well, we was riding that wave, winning game after game, you know, I think in terms of the media and the pressure they was trying to put on us, he would take that completely away.
Yeah, he did.
You know, he was like, you know, yeah, he'll have his catchphrases and one-liners and that, but, you know, the media was trying to get that you know, that headline, you know, are you going to win the league? Can you do it? And he'd be like, no, we're just going to try and like get to the magic 40
so
points.
Was the pizza thing a real thing, or was that just another PR?
So that was a clean sheet. So I think we struggled to get a clean sheet, didn't we, in the first
first nine. You didn't have a clean sheet in the first nine.
So
that's why he brought me and Fuchsie in.
Well, yeah, probably. Probably, but in typical Claudio fashion, you know, okay, first clean sheet, take you out for a pizza. I actually missed it. I don't know.
Is it there?
I wasn't there. You know, I seen it all on the socials. I was like, good. I think I might have been international. I had something called anyway. But yeah, I missed out on the pizza. But that was, you know, one of the many things he would cook up. Cook up, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting. You know, you watch you play it. When you look at some of the sides now, inevitably, things like, you know, the way the goalkeeper's got to pass the ball to the nearest defender. You try and play out of trouble at the back constantly. And that wasn't the way under Claudio, was it? It was much more, you know, if you're in trouble, get rid.
Yeah, I think, you know.
Because we had Jamie Vardy to chase it.
I know. I think,
yeah, well, exactly.
We had a players, we had a system. Yeah. You know what I mean? And we had a back four, which probably could identify as probably not old school, I'd say, but, you know, stood up, be counted solid. We weren't expecting fullbacks to be joining in as wingers and 2v2 at the back, me and Hufi. You know, we had a solid system. Yeah, Simo would go sometimes to support Riyad. Fuchsia would go sometimes, but we'll be on a pivot. You know, we had a solid midfield in once N'Golo actually got into the team, and Danny Drinkwater, who N'Golo is like two players on the pitch, so you already got an advantage. And Drinky, you know, he could spot a pass and deliver a pass.
Did then, N'Golo not start in the
no,
team?
No, he didn't. Like, no, from the beginning, you know, I remember him coming on first couple of games. Stoke. He came on left wing Stoke. At one point. Yeah, Stoke. Came on left wing, and then he was like so good. He's like,
oh, he can play. He can play anywhere.
We had Gökhan Inler, who was probably like a marquee signing.
Yeah, he was.
So he kind of started, and then N'Golo had to kind of wait for his opportunity to come off the bench a little bit. But once he got in, he was no turning back. Yeah, but he was, like you said, you know, it was probably going a bit more back to front than you would see these days. When you got Shinji Okazaki, who's got 110% work rate for 95 minutes.
To 60 minutes.
Yeah, 60 minutes.
That was the jokes, wasn't it? Yeah.
And then Vars, you would chase down anything, you know. You've always kind of got a chance. And we're not just clearing the ball, you know. We're hitting them into areas which we know would benefit our team, and Vars could get onto it.
Yeah.
I mean, he obviously had... Everybody had an amazing season. Everyone did. But Jamie, you know, 11 consecutive Premier League games he scored in. And I calculated just those goals. It doesn't always work this way, of course, but those goals were worth 16 points effectively. Wow. Yeah, it was 11 in those 11 games.
Yeah, do you remember though? Like we were playing for him to get that record towards the last few games. Like we weren't actually thinking like, oh, we need to win today's game. We just wanted him to maybe when he got to 7 or 8.
Yeah,
and we were talking about it, weren't we?
Yeah,
and we just wanted him to score.
Yeah.
So like even that United game, obviously I'm a United fan, and we was just desperate for him to get that goal, weren't we?
Yeah.
And when he did, it was like we all got put the record.
The closer it got to that, you know, obviously the talks are coming, it was like, oh, can he really? And then you get to 7, you get to 8, you're like, you've got to do it for us. You've got to do it for us, not just for yourself. You've got to do it for us because we're all right behind you. So I'm sure Riyad and that, you know, could have scored a couple extra goals, but would tee him up instead. Yeah, that was a bit of a theme for a bit, wasn't it?
I mean, there's a shot of the boy from Fleetwood, the ex-factory worker, and that with his Premier League winners medal, and I just looking at the you know at Jamie and his background, and the fact Danny Mew had told you were too small, and Wedgie had told you were too big. In some ways, you're sort of an inspiration for kids these days, aren't they? Yeah. You know, that don't necessarily believe everything you're told at a young age.
Nah, and Danny mentioned it before. You know, resilience is a big thing, and you have to kind of go through the tough times, the negativity to kind of come out, you know, and it's easier said than done. You know, a lot of people would crumble because it's just too much. But if you can come out the other side and believe in yourself and your ability, you can go far, you know, and I think our group is definitely testament to that, because the majority of our group was probably not seen as, okay, they're tipped to be the next superstars in football. You know, we've had to work hard and grind. And that's what we did.
I like to think there that, you know, when the kids is just don't give up, just never give up. And that was our mentality. Because you look, well, Jamie's, you know, a prime example. You know, anything's possible. You know, he didn't just stop there. He carried on, and he's still playing now. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, and I just think, yeah, any young kid, you know, you get told no, you know, things are not going great, it can easily turn. And just believe in yourself, as Wes says, and stick together and get good people around you, and you know, and you never know what can happen.
When did you first think you'd win the title?
Are we different on this?
I think we are different. So for me, it was when you played Man City away. Okay, and it's pretty early, you know, mid-Feb, was it?
Yeah,
that was
a week before Arsenal.
Well, that's the funny thing, like, you know, we're playing Man City, you know, we know what talent they've got. At the outside, we're thinking, right, if we can just get a point, we're great. But the way we kind of went about our business, the way we kind of won the game, that's when it first clicked to me, like, we could actually be on for something special here. You know, because this is Man City at the Etihad, and we've just turned them over pretty comfortably.
Yeah, you battered them. Yeah. Let's be honest, you were 3-0 up, weren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Ironically, the next game, was the Arsenal game. Simmer gets sent off, we lose, and we're like, oh man, that's a bit of a shock to the system, to be fair. But yeah, the Man City game, definitely for me, when I thought we could do something special,
Yeah, I think that was Riyad scored that goal. I think even from us, just from Riyad's point of view here, you just look at him, wow, this kid's a superstar. We knew how good he was, but that goal, I just remember past Joe Hart, his little step over. And, but yeah, that wasn't really the game. I was too scared to believe that it was going to happen, because I feel like, and I do that, something goes wrong. So for me, it was West Ham, which was quite late. But I just think the way, because we were playing first before Tottenham, I think they had Europe, so they play on a Thursday. So we played before them. We always had a chance to, you know, get 3 points ahead of them. I mean, with West Ham at home, do you remember what happened, the first goal? Penalty.
What was that mean?
Did you find Andy Carroll?
I still don't believe that was a penalty.
Nah, was. No, and, you know, we were 2-1 down. Jamie Vardy gets sent off. You think, oh, we've not got Vardy for the next game. What are we going to do? We kept fighting, you know, we kept it at 2-1, and we got a penalty right at the end. Jeff Schlupp got a penalty, and we drew 2-2. And when we got into the dressing room, that felt like a win, that point. And that's when I thought, like, this is ours. This has got to be ours now, because everything's kind of fallen into place. And I think that if you're Tottenham watching that, you know, you're so disheartened then that we've got a point. So it was like, you can get a point in the game, but it was like, have you lost 2 points? So I gained a point, and we felt like we gained it. And that was for me.
I think, I don't think there was a help or a hindrance, but obviously at this stage, you know, every football fan in the country is rooting for you. I mean, everyone, and probably most of them, I think, and the wheels are going to fall off at some stage. I mean, I remember, I mentioned to you earlier, you know, I remember it was a Monday night game where you played Newcastle, and it was not a thing of great beauty, you know, and you won 1-0 on the night. And I think there were a series of 1-0s at that stage. And I just wonder whether that awareness that you could win the title was making it tougher.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes that mentality shift, you know, we go back to the season before, you know, we just avoided relegation. So kind of, we had no pressure on ourselves. Even though it was flying high and everyone's getting a bit excited, we kind of put no pressure on ourselves for a long, long time. I don't know if we kind of thought in-house, like, or some of the guys, like, yeah, the wheels going to fall off at some point, but let's enjoy the ride.
Yeah, we were just know? Like, yeah.
But there was no pressure until kind of like we're getting into, you know, the warmer months of the year. Possible, and it's like, okay, we're still up there, guys. We've played everyone. We've not lost hardly any games. Something crazy could happen.
I think that we just didn't, like, the 1-0s, we loved it. You know, listen, everyone likes to win 4-0, but we enjoyed, like, defending as a team, you know, on blocks and clearances, and he'd shout at me for most of the games. If it was my fault screaming at me, but I'd shout at him back, and we just all was always on each other. So we won 1-0, we got in, and we felt quite, oh, that was great, that, you know, stopping another team scoring. So I just think, we did enjoy them moments, as well as, you know, the good goals that Vards and Riyad had scored. But I think them series of 1-0s were like, it's just like,
we don't mind grinding out a game.
Yeah.
Like, we, as defenders as well.
I think that summed us up,
as a defender, our pride and joy is getting, well, for me anyway, clean sheets, you know, and you get a clean sheet, that's as good as a goal for me. You know what I mean? From a defender's point of view.
Did you go home and talk to your friends and family about the possibility of winning the title? Even if you weren't saying anything publicly.
Yeah. I can't get myself in a bubble, you know. I wouldn't listen to the news much. I wouldn't, you know, listen to socials. My friends obviously would speak about it. But obviously my tight-knit group, you know, it's fine, and you can just be honest with them.
Do you remember when we was in Copenhagen, Christmas?
All right.
And normally they said it, normally the team that's top of the league at Christmas goes on to win it. Yeah. And our Christmas party's in Copenhagen. And we're all like just sat in the sun. I'll never forget it. We're all dressed as Pac-Man and Turtles and
so it was
Spider-Man.
It was the Christmas
and we're all
you
sat there
fancy
dress in fancy dress. And we're like, lads, a team that's probably normally spends Christmas Day winning the league, you know, wins the league, and we're all sat there talking about it in our cartoon characters, in our outfits, and I remember that was surreal.
That would have made a great team photo.
We've got some photos somewhere.
You was Pac-Man, weren't you?
Yeah, I'm with Pac-Man that year.
Yeah.
Sully the year after, I think. Monsters, Inc.
It's interesting because Cloudy obviously earned the name of the Tinker Man when he was down at Chelsea and things. It was the last thing he was, really, wasn't it, at Leicester? Because you could pretty much name the team every single week, couldn't you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, for us, we don't have much injuries, you know. There wasn't much kind of... Normally, a reason to change the game is when you're not really performing, you know, and you make a few changes and that. So, injury-wise, was pretty good. Suspensions wasn't bad. Team performing each week, you know. So, the kind of Tinkerman thing, didn't really have the opportunity to change it much, you know. And probably just go back a little bit from when we was talking about what's Claudio like, you know. On the training pitch, it was pretty firm and, like, you know, focused and wanting us to kind of, like, right, everyone needs to know their jobs. Everyone needs to know their jobs. So there's a bit of a different side we saw, or we knew, compared to kind of what the fans and the media saw. But that's obviously, you know, him as a manager wanting to obviously achieve things and be the best.
So you've won the title. I mean, that summer must have been a bit surreal, wasn't it?
What was your summer, mate?
I had the best summer of my life. I think I didn't take the medal off, mate, to be honest. I actually remember we went to LA and there's like a group of lads, and Alex Oxlade Chamberlain was there with us, and I think every day I was just like, you got on the knees, mate. But just having banter with everyone. No, listen, like I said, it's not something you expect, so it was just, you know, like, yeah, I think you mentioned before, Jeff, about the neutrals coming up to you and congratulating you. So that wasn't just like Leicester fans, it was everyone, even in America, because it's a big, you know, underdog story. They loved that. And everywhere you went was just people just praising you. So, no, it was a great summer. And, yeah, I didn't want it to end, really, but yeah.
Yeah, I think...
Did I see you that summer?
I don't know, like, because we go... The owners would have took us, so we had probably like a 4-week whirlwind of celebration since we was, you know, crown champions.
Yeah.
And one of the things the ownership always do is take us to Thailand. So we had a spell in Thailand. I would have had international duty anyway, but I would have maybe got a week or 2 weeks grace before going back. So we would have had a crazy time as a team, as a club in Thailand.
Yeah.
And I remember leaving Thailand to go... obviously report for international duty. But my summer, you know, especially when I was playing internationals, I'll try and get a bit of downtime. You know, I'll go on a family holiday, maybe get a bit of a holiday with the lads. And that was it.
Yeah, I said to my mates in maybe January or February, if we win the league, I'll take you to Marbella. Didn't think we were going to win the league. So when it was confirmed, they were texting me like, when we got in Marbella. So to be fair, all my mates I grew up with, like 10 of us, we all went. And yeah, just like I said, friends from, who've been there from day one and seen me struggles and, you know, and so on and so forth. And yeah, it's about 10 of us and we had a week over there and it was just my mates from school and stuff. So it was pretty special.
Well, despite that, the next season started okay, in fairness. But I think by February, it was sort of unravelling. You were out of the FA Cup and you lost to Seville in the Champions League and were just outside the relegation places. And obviously, Claudio was sacked. Mm. So, and we heard all the stories, you know. But what was the reaction of the players to Claudio leaving the club?
I'm going to be honest, I think it was mixed. Like... For me personally, I was sad to see him go. Personally, I think it was tough that season, you know, because we went from Saturday. You see it now in the Premier League now with Newcastle when they get into Europe, or any other team gets into Europe, they struggle in the league. And I feel like that was us, you know, and we didn't have a big enough squad, you know, to cope with Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday. So I just think it was, for me, it was pretty early. We were trying. I think other players might say different, but I think, like I said, it was, for me to start, obviously he gave me my chance. I felt like I owed him a lot. So yeah, I think that season was always going to be difficult, trying to balance Premier League and Champions League when not really any of us have done that before. So I don't know.
I think from my point of view, obviously it's never good to see a manager go, is it? You know what I mean? And I've been around the game a long time. I don't know, probably 15 plus managers. You know what I mean? Every season seemed to be at one point a different manager or two. But obviously with what Claudio achieved and the significance of kind of what's happened, you know, it's always a tough one. It's always a tough one to see the person that's kind of crowned a team like Leicester or helped push a team like Leicester to be champions go. But at the same time, I'm a bit of a realistic kind of person. I knew results wasn't great. I knew we were struggling in a position where we shouldn't be. Performances wasn't the best, even though we was flying in the Champions League, you know, domestically we wasn't doing great, you know. So it wasn't a total surprise to see it coming, knowing that the ownership expects a lot, especially on the back of the previous season. So it was sad to see, but I wasn't totally surprised.
I just think we need to realize we were Leicester. I know we had the gold badge on our arm, but we were Leicester City. Like, you know, and the other teams that we defeated and winning the title were not happy. You know, you mentioned the points gap and stuff, and they obviously clearly strengthened. And yeah, I just do think we was, because it was so good for the last 50 games, because of the 10 before, you know, when we got relegated to 10 games and the 38, then I think it was just, we got used to winning.
Yeah.
And then it was weird for us to be losing. So it was strange, but I do think we were Leicester City.
I mean, looking back, you know, 10 years on, with the benefit of hindsight, was it the right decision?
That's a good question, really. You know, Shaky took over.
Yeah, but then
we still continue to do well in the Champions League.
But then even Shaky didn't really...
changed
a lot. His role in God rest his soul, his role in the team was so vital as the assistant.
Yeah.
He was so good at it. He obviously took it on as the manager. And didn't really want to take that on, but obviously felt responsible too, and he thought he could. But no, I think in hindsight, I'm going to say it wasn't the right decision, because then the following manager that came in, I didn't get on with. You know, Carpiwell came in, and that wasn't a good fit. Obviously, Brendan ended up coming in, which I think was, I only had a little bit of time with him, but I just thought he was fantastic, unbelievable coach. So yeah, for me, I would have liked to have seen him stay a bit longer for what he'd done for us. But football's football.
Yeah. 9 permanent managers since him, you know, so they've been through a few, and that's not including the so-called interim managers. I think we call them interim rather than caretakers these days, don't we? And you mentioned the Champions League, Wes, and he had a great run. Got the quarterfinals, some quarterfinals of the Champions League. That's some achievement. And lost narrowly to Atletico Madrid in the quarterfinals. But... do you think that defeat was the point where the team maybe started to unravel?
Yeah.
Was that the sort of was that the beginning of the end for this title winning team?
Yeah,
I felt so.
Probably, I don't want to probably admit it, to be honest, you know, because you know I'm still in the euphoria of of all the good times a little bit. But we gave a great account of ourselves in the. In the Champions League, I think it was the last remaining English side at that stage. Even the game we lost, kind of thing, we went out and we gave it our all. You know, everyone loves to talk about. You know, you gave it a great effort. But after that, it was definitely a spell where we kind of like, okay, are we just a mid team now? Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's hard to get them feelings back.
What are we? You know, a few personnel changes. You lose a bit of the dressing room a little bit. But like Danny said there, you know, went through a manager, wasn't quite the right fit. But then Brendan came in, gave us a bit of a boost, and we had some good finishes, good performances.
We won the FA Cup,
got the 9-0 against Southampton, you know, some unbelievable moment. Was fighting for the title, actually, throughout the season, and we kind of dropped off towards the end in a couple of Brendan's seasons. So, yeah, it's the cycle of football a little bit, I think.
I felt like I knew certain players would then move on. So our team, we already lost N'Golo, which we didn't want. Nobody wanted that. And we were coping in the Champions League without him. Imagine if we had him. I always think that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, yeah, I just think you start to lose your best players, you know, and you don't, you're happy for them because they're going to move on into better things, you know, Riyad, et cetera, and you know, Chilwell left. But, yeah, I felt like that was our little, for me anyway, it was like, oh, my team. It's sort of that little bit of the dream we was on is just gone.
Yeah.
But it's just football.
I mean, people, yeah, move on in every different direction. Do you still see the guys? Do you still get together at all?
Actually, you know, we're quite good.
Yeah, in terms of that, to be fair.
We're in the group chats, not as active as they used to be, some of the group chats. It's about 3 or 4 group chats from different eras for me because I've been there so long. But now, especially with the 10-year anniversary, you know, kicking in, coming the end of the season and the celebrations that we're trying to organise, I'm speaking to all of them a lot at the moment. So looking forward to catching up with everyone in face to face.
I have to mention Leicester's current plight. How do you feel about what's happened at the club in recent seasons, Danny?
We speak about it all the time, as you can imagine. Every time a result comes in and we're on the phone, aren't we? And
yeah, really difficult. Really, really difficult. And like Danny said, you know, I share everything he said, you know, I totally agree with. And I think just, you know, when we kind of look back at our time and you leave the club and you're thinking, right, you left it in a good place, you know, hopefully, you know, there might not be the top times, but at least you're going to be a staple Premier League club, in and around it, you know, season after season. And to see them obviously drop down to the Championship and then come back up, think, wow, we dodged the bullet, and then drop back down, and then see them now kind of the position they're in and kind of watch kind of the team and performances, you're thinking, what the hell has happened?
I mean, obviously it's been a roller coaster ride as far as the fans are concerned, but from the time you won the title for the next 5 years or whatever, it was just an unimaginably fantastic time for, you know, with the best will in the world, aside from not the biggest city in the East Midlands and the such like. I mean, those are days they could never have anticipated.
Yeah, unbelievable. Like, you know, when I look back at the beginning of my career and spending, you know, half my career in the Championship, in the League One, to get promoted to the Premier League at 30 years old, you know, a lot of people on the wheels are falling off. And, yeah. Well, that's dip from 30,
over the hill.
My best years, you know, to play in Champions League, to
score,
play in Europe and to score in the Champions League, to play in Europa, the FA Cup, to be a part of a team with some mass performances and big results, and just to see the team go from where it was to what it became, a new training ground, which is unbelievable. Just go from strength to strength, and then you kind of, you leave, you think you're leaving it in good hands, and now you see where it is, you know, those good times, it's like, fantastic, but why are we here where we are now, kind of thing. It's sad to see.
Your last game was FA Cup final. There's no better way to finish your career and leave a club as captain than lifting the FA Cup and saying, right, I'm done, guys, you know what I mean? Oh. So for you, obviously, it must be obviously even more harder to take.
Nah, exactly. You know, you know what it's like, you know, you're getting older, I'm 35, 36, you get demoted to the bench and then you're not even in the squad and you're just trying to think, right, it's come to an end. And I probably became a bit of a moaner, you know.
I know you're a moaner.
Like, obviously going in, I'm thinking, right, I'm too old for this. This, I won't even say the right, finish that sentence, I want a sentence, but I'm too old for this. But yeah, you know, to see the team kind of compete in the FA Cup, and to me, to kind of start the season, then be injured for a long, long time, knowing I'm going to retire, thinking, right, I want one more game, just to go on the grass and say my bye to the fans. Little did I know that last game would have been the FA Cup final, you know, so it was an unbelievable way to kind of like say bye to my career.
Yeah, not many people have done that. It's a brilliant way to finish. Do you ever look at that Premier League winner's medal?
Yeah, I've got it in a fantastic position. But what's great, you know, we all got these little mini Premier League trophies given to us, you know, so I've got a good display. I've got the Premier League kind of in a shirt, in a frame, and the trophy, and the medal, all in one frame, and then the FA Cup on the other side of kind of my room, and then obviously all my kind of accolades and medals and trophies throughout the years, kind of all in and around it.
I read a story, Danny, I really hope it's true, that once in a while you dig your medal out and you put it around your neck. Well, no.
Last weekend, you know.
Just to remind yourself of what you achieved.
Yeah, the FaceTime, Wes. No, it is true. No, sometimes, you know, sometimes life's tough and you know, sometimes it's nice to remind yourself of what you've done. Sometimes people will come over and like kind of see the medal. So that's what I kind of meant, and I'll go and get it out and put it on and sit there for a while and let other people see it and stuff. So no, it's like I said, it's something I never thought I'd have. So yeah, it's nice to bring it out sometimes.
Yeah, and why not? Because it was the achievement of a lifetime. Mm. Both of you are absolutely brilliant. Wes Danick, loved your company. Thanks very much for joining us. I think it's high time we got out there and got a tenner on Curaçao. Hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
You've been watching The Jeff Stelling Show, brought to you by OLBJ.